Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Gilman Star for the week of February 24th. We'll start with local news and the Gilman Old Boys and Girls 2021 reunion has been scheduled for August 12th through 15th. The As We See It column. Ever since we did our stint in the Army, where the motto seemed to be hurry up and wait, we hate to be in lines for long periods of time or among masses of people. So when we got an appointment to get our first COVID-19 vaccination last week, we were not looking forward to the process. But getting a shot at Iroquois Memorial Hospital last week as part of the system set up by the IMH and the Iroquois County Public Health Department was a very positive experience. We got there Friday, about 15 to 20 minutes ahead of our 9 a.m. appointment, and they started us right through, and at 9:03, after the mandated 15-minute wait after the shot, we were headed out the door. The whole process was pleasant and efficient, and we wish to commend IMH and Iroquois Public Health for a job well done. We were told that they were shooting, no pun intended, to get 500 residents vaccinated with this phase of the program. We want to say up front that we are an alderman for the city of Gilman, and it is public that the council is struggling to find a way to provide police protection in this day and age for the residents. We're not the only small town in that predicament. In the village of Washburn, Illinois, west of here in the Bloomington-Peoria area, made the news lately when they decided they're done trying, citing the cost and news demands of the state when it comes to outfitting an officer and a department. And not as many young people want to be officers anymore. Not as many are applying for police jobs, especially in small towns, which makes it hard for a small burg to hire an officer, send them to police school at the town's expense, only to see them leave after a year or two. And officers don't often stay long in small towns because once you're driven to one end of the town to the other a few times, you've seen it all. Then figure in the defund the police movements. Reminds us of the 1960s when returning service members were spit on and called baby killers. As we mentioned before, service members at that time were advised not to wear their uniforms when traveling. Election judges needed. Iroquois County Clerk Brian Suver announced she is looking for individuals willing to work as election judges on April 6, 2021. There is always a need for Republican and Democratic election judges throughout the county. However, there is a critical need for Democratic election judges for this election. Election judges are responsible for opening and closing the polling place, for all voting materials, ensuring all votes are cast in secret, instructing voters, offering assistance to disabled voters, maintaining order of the polling place, etc. Election judges are paid $120 per day, plus additional for attending training. Please call the election department at the county clerk's office at 815-432-6960. Iroquois County provides tax inquiry website. County Treasurer Kirk Albers is announcing that Iroquois County real estate taxpayers can view and print previously paid tax bills online by visiting www.iroquoisil.devnetwedge.com. This service can be used for information needed to file income taxes for 2020. Please note when using the tax inquiry website, only use one of the following to search for a tax bill: the PIN or parcel number with no spaces or dashes, name or address. For questions, contact the Treasurer's Office at 815-432-6985. World Day of Prayer in Crescent City. The 2021 World Day of Prayer service will take place at 9:30 a.m. Friday, March 5th at the United Methodist Church in Crescent City. The women from the United Methodist, St. Peter's Lutheran, and St. Joseph's Catholic Churches of Crescent City will present the program. No March open house for CCHS. There will be no open house for the Crescent City Historical Society during the month of March. However, the Society is still open to accept donations, whether temporary or permanent, and membership is still open. As a nonprofit The group also accepts monetary donations to help purchase needed supplies. A card shower for John Goldenstein. The family of John Goldenstein of Onarga will be hosting a card shower for his 90th birthday. John was born on March 4, 1931 in rural Gilman to Louis and Anna Goldenstein. He farmed for many years in the Gilman-Danforth area, as well as traveled throughout Illinois and surrounding states with his farm machinery business. Cards and greetings may be sent to John Goldenstein, 105 South Blue Spruce Lane, Onarga, Illinois, 60955. And now from Daniel W. Rosser from Onarga. On the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. Some thoughts are occasioned by Mr. Mann's editorial appearing in the Gilman Star for February 17 on the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, SETI, SETI. SETI is a popular program fueled by generations of science fiction literature and movies which embrace the likelihood of abundant worlds of intelligent beings either waiting for us to discover them or coming to our Earth to destroy us or enslave us or eat us, depending on the storyline. There is no reason to believe in any of this except for the Darwinian theory of evolution. It is a true fact that the entire universe of trillions of stars and galaxies is governed by the same laws of physics and chemistry that direct all the operations that we observe locally. It is highly likely that a very great many of these stars are attended by their own retinue of orbiting planets. It is perfectly obvious that the Earth is teeming with living forms. It is, however, an absurd leap of the imagination to conclude that life in the universe must be an abundant fact of nature. Only a theory of spontaneous organic evolution proffers the smallest hope of finding ET in any form. But that theory is thermodynamically and statistically impossible here on Earth. And with the same physics and chemistry on other planets, life would be precluded. Certainly, Earth's living forms are all governed by DNA, which is coded information which scientists continue to discover reaches to staggering levels of complexity that could never arise from chance processes. It would be like the 20-volume OED assembling its sequence of letters by a random drop of letter type from a large type case. DNA has layer upon layer of complexity and a precise sequence of gene codons yielding a variety of functional proteins that must be folded in a precisely guided labyrinth, all expressive of a supreme intelligence. Another notable fact is that evolution theory is entirely lacking in the smallest demonstrable evidence. It is a house of cards which falls apart upon the latest scrutiny. None species has ever been observed to transmute into another species. Evolution cannot be forced in the laboratory. Even the much touted fossil evidence only proves stasis. Evolution is untestable and cannot predict, therefore it fails to qualify as science. It is a religious myth. And don't tell me about mutation. Mutation is not evolution. It is a loss of genetic information and proves evolution is a lie. Christians who believe in an inerrant Bible and trust in the ability of an infinite God to tell us true words about origins can only reject evolution as a theory for origins, especially as it has no mechanism for upward speciation by random mutation and natural selection, which is in any case in direct defiance of both the second law of thermodynamics and the highly structured genetic code with built-in error detection and minimization features, a parity code, and even so-called junk DNA that actually preserves the integrity of gene transcription. So do proceed with SETI. I have no problem with that, neither its public or private funding. Its main mission, of course, will fail, but the engineering solutions to its many procedural problems will give us many industrial benefits, as did the early man in space program. In the end, the universe yet remains, in a theological sense, geocentric as per Ptolemy and the Fermi paradox. In a universe supposedly teeming with life, where is everybody? Is answered by Genesis, chapters 1 and 2, which announce the creation of the earth and mankind as God's central concern in a larger universe that was made only to serve us and glorify the Creator. See Psalms 8:39 and 11:5. and 115-15-16. And the Garage Rec Center schedule for Friday, February 26th, from 6 to 8 p.m., Friday night hangout for grades 6 through 8. All students must register to attend by calling or texting Bev at 708-921-6304 by noon on Friday. And Wednesday, March 3rd, from 5 to 6, the Cub Scouts Lions K-Den meeting. 5:30 to 6:30, the Cub Scouts Tigers first grade den meeting. Ashcombe 4-H'ers make Valentines. On February 13th, President Dylan Behrens called a Zoom meeting to order for the Ashcombe Go-Getters at 9:49 a.m. Pledges were led by Bryce Hensler. There were 20 4-H members, 4 4-H leaders, 10 guests, and one cloverbud present at the meeting. Secretary's minutes from the January meeting were read by Abby Hansen. Riley Behrens read the treasurer's report. Health and safety report was written and read by Ainsley Porter and Lainey Bushin on walking safely in winter. Secretary minutes were approved with revisions. The treasurer's report was approved as read. For old business, Dylan reported that 4-H online re-enrollment was open now. Dylan asked 4-H members to enroll. Krista Hickman wrote two quarantine times Valentine's editions for the local nursing homes. On January 23rd and 30th, small groups of 4-H members gathered to make the residents of local nursing homes homemade Valentines. A total of 172 Valentines were given to the residents of Arcadia Care of Clifton, Gilman Healthcare, and Prairie View Lutheran Home. 6 dozen donuts, along with napkins, were also delivered with the Valentines for the residents of Arcadia Care of Clifton. For new business, the Easter egg hunt is not going to be like the years in the past due to COVID-19. Charlene Finnegan requested a committee be made to discuss different activities instead of the regular Easter egg hunt. Teen teachers, including Krista Hickman and four members from Champaign and Vermilion counties, led 4-H members in a Find Your Spark activity. 4-H members were mailed supplies for some of the major categories you can submit at the fair, such as visual arts, animal science, clay, paper circuits, and health and physical fitness. For today, the teen teachers had the 4-H members open the visual arts supplies and make their own monsters from the supplies that were included. 4-H members had 10 minutes to construct their monster and give it a name. For demonstrations, John Fatka started with his demonstration of how to code a computer game. Abby Hansen followed with how to do a 5-strand braid. Elizabeth Fatka demonstrated how to draw a human. Riley Behrens prepared a demonstration on how to make an at-home DQ blizzard. The next meeting is scheduled for March 13th at 9:30 a.m. Cloverbuds had their own Zoom meeting on February 14th at 4 p.m., which included reading Valentine's Day books and doing an instructed drawing of Valentine's Day hearts candy from Art Hub. By Claire Byerly, reporter. And now the Iroquois County COVID-19 report as of February 22nd. Total cases, 2,768. Confirmed cases, 2,359. Test results, 39,056. Negative, 36,288. Positive, 2,359. Deaths, 57. Of the confirmed cases, 2,689 have recovered and been released. One is hospitalized and 21 remain isolated at home. By town, on February 17th, Gilman had 289 cases. As of the 22nd, 290, up 1. Clifton remained at 257. Ashcombe increased from 153 to 156, Danforth 92 to 93, Onarga remained at 250, Watseka up 2, 567 to 569, Crescent City up 1, 63 to 64, Cisna Park remained at 179, Thawville up 1, 38 to 39, Piper City remained at 124. And now from Russ Mann, COVID-19, the road back. Just over 1 year ago, it seems longer, an outbreak of SARS coronavirus reportedly began in Wuhan, China. The World Health Organization, WHO, became aware of the fact that it was a new strain, never seen before, and declared the COVID-19 outbreak a global health emergency on January 30th, 2020. Then on January 21, our own CDC confirmed that the first U.S. coronavirus case in Washington State had just returned from Wuhan, China on January 15th. We are painfully aware of what happened across America from then until now. Efforts by our medical scientific community were hindered by political ambitions that turned a large portion of our population into COVID deniers who to this day refuse to comply with protective measures. Health experts tried to warn that our holiday season, if celebrated with the usual large gatherings, would become super spreader events, and as predicted, cases surged after Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. By year's end, cases rose globally to 83,832,334 and 1,824,590 deaths. And in the United States, by December 31st, 2020, had surpassed 20 million infections and more than 346,000 deaths. So where are we for the future? Science, pharmaceutical research labs, in spite of an unimaginably massive challenge, came through, and in the last month of the year, vaccines began to roll out. Though final approvals have yet to be granted, both Pfizer and Moderna two-dose vaccines have been given emergency approval, and inoculations have begun all over the USA. Soon, a single-shot inoculation by Johnson & Johnson will join the fight. Only through CDC-recommended precautions, distancing, mask-wearing, and population herd immunity, can we put this scourge behind us and return to a brisk economy and a normal life. But are the vaccines working? The most vulnerable in our society, healthcare providers, essential workers, and seniors, are being treated first, and according to public health experts, a vaccination campaign in Illinois nursing homes is working. COVID-19 infections and deaths among long-term care residents are now dropping faster than COVID-19 numbers in the general population, where vaccine availability and inoculations are only just beginning. In fact, thanks to escalated efforts nationally, and newly reported infections are at the lowest level since October 2020. According to the World Health Organization's Dr. Kate O'Brien, after the first dose, we see a good immune response that kicks in within about 2 weeks of that first dose. And it's really the second dose, then, that boosts that immune response, and we see immunity get even stronger after that second dose, again with a shorter period of time after the second dose. With 50 million Americans having received one dose, the CDC has reported that the Biden administration goal of 1 million injections per day is now up to 1.7 million shots per day. Still at that rate, it will be December 2021 to achieve herd immunity. But they will not stop there. They are now setting their sights on 3 million inoculations per day to accomplish immunity by July. While distribution and production challenges still exist, our local health officials and healthcare providers have begun providing us with the road back. Iroquois County Public Health has partnered with Iroquois Memorial Hospital and has been conducting inoculation clinics since December 17, 2020. IMH Outreach Director Mary K. Levicka reports that the clinics will administer however many doses the state releases to the county, but most releases have been around 300 doses of Moderna vaccine. The County Public Health Department handles the clinics, and scheduling at about 10 patients every 10 minutes. At each clinic, 300 doses have been dispensed in around 6 hours. To date, releases to rural areas have been Moderna vaccine because most clinics do not have the ability to store Pfizer at 70 below centigrade. However, new data indicates that Pfizer may remain effective when stored at normal freezer temperatures for 2 weeks. Both vaccines require two shots, the first being a priming dose and the second a booster shot. The interval between doses is 28 days for Moderna and 21 days for Pfizer. But that new research also shows that the first dose of the Pfizer vaccine is more effective than thought and may provide 85 to 92% efficacy. Chief Nursing Officer at IMH, RN Michelle Fairley, says, IMH is committed to providing the COVID-19 vaccine clinics to the community as quickly as possible. Notifications of upcoming clinics are posted on the Iroquois County Public Health Facebook page. Liking that page will help you get notifications. The Newsbreak app on your cell phone will also report upcoming clinics. As soon as appointments are being made, start calling. The lines will be busy, but keep calling. It's important. ICPHD laments that the call-in system has its flaws, and those who fail to get appointments are often upset. But Iroquois County is getting doses into arms quicker than most other counties. And as more clinics are held and more inoculations are given, the fewer people will be flooding the lines to get appointments, making it easier to get through. What to expect upon arrival? You will be directed to the IMH North main entrance. Then IMH staff members will assist you with registration, check-in, patient temperatures. Following your injection, you will be asked to remain for 15 minutes observation. It is rare, but some people will experience allergic reactions. Meanwhile, staff members will check consents, patient observation and discharge, and schedule second dose. Additional IMH staff assist as greeters, escorts, assist with directing patients, parking, wheelchairs, etc. IMH is dedicated to providing patient safety. Iroquois County has a 2019 population of 27,812. As of February 16th, 4,278 residents have been vaccinated, with 1,203 having received their second dose. The stated goal of IMH-ICPH is to vaccinate 80% of the residents in Iroquois County, and help to accomplish that is on the way, as supplies to the states has increased over the last 4 weeks from 8.6 million doses per week to over 13.5 million per week, an increase of nearly 60%. Experts are not yet sure what percentage of people would need to get vaccinated to achieve community or herd immunity to COVID-19, but many estimates are that it will begin with somewhere around 70% of the population inoculated. We'll turn now to the death notice for the week. Eugene W. Merkel of Loda, formerly of Danforth, passed away February 19th. Services were held February 24th at Immaculate Conception Catholic Church in Gilman. Burial was at St. Mary's Catholic Cemetery in Gilman. Memorials may be made to Iroquois Memorial Hospice or to the donor's choice. Arrangements were made by Knapp Redinius Funeral Home in Gilman. Please share a memory of Eugene at knappfuneralhomes.com. His peaceful passing at home leaves a huge void within his family. And now from Alan Weber. What's your favorite Biden executive order so far? Over the past few years, I've heard family members, Facebook friends, employees, and even fellow high school alumni whine about Donald Trump, especially if Trump said something mean. Some unfriended me, while others shunned me because I was the idiot on the Trump train. Equally telling, there are three other local op-ed writers in our area's newspapers. Of the four of us, I was the one not informing you of the evils of Trump presidency. Those gentlemen, on the other hand, were quite vocal of how couth, racist, xenophobic, sexist, and unpresidential Trump was. Given the rancor of some of those commentaries, you'd think Trump drowned puppies, too. I'm of the belief one should be accountable for opinions espoused. I certainly stand firmly behind mine. We're now over a month into the presidency of the handlers of Basement Biden, the candidate to save us from the embarrassment that was Donald Trump. I wonder what those folks are thinking this far into the Biden presidency. We don't know, because none of them have opined yet. I find this strange, given that the Here, Joe, Sign Here handlers are moving with lightning speed to erase Trump and replicate the Obama presidency. It occurs to me I haven't heard from those people boasting about Biden because they're still complaining about Trump. There is no shortage of items to enlighten us on about the Biden presidency so far. Perhaps any one of those folks I mentioned might want to educate us about any of the following Biden deeds. They could begin by giving us justification for the skyrocketing price of fuel. Gasoline is up 43 cents per gallon and diesel 47 cents here in Pritzkerville just since Biden got elected. Oil prices have increased due to shutting down both the Keystone Pipeline and fracking, much to the delight of Russia and OPEC. It would appear Quid Pro Joe prefers we import our oil rather than produce our own. While explaining the Keystone Pipeline closure, please clarify what was good for America with the loss of thousands of good-paying jobs, despite the campaign promise not to do so. Or, if easier, just explain who the lying dog-faced pony soldier might really be. What might be their consensus on Creepy Joe letting mediocre male athletes participate in girls' sports, and into their locker rooms or restrooms. Perhaps the Trump derangement syndrome set might want to ask their daughters, granddaughters, or nieces for their opinions. Having four granddaughters heavily involved in sports, I'm especially interested in their explanations, so I might relate what is good about it to them. I'm personally irritated about being labeled a party to systemic racism, as well as China Joe's daily blathering about the rise of so-called white supremacist groups terrorizing America. In fact, I don't think those charges are accurate and are only meant to divide America further, a nifty trick learned from Obama. Perhaps one of you could clarify why I am wrong. It would be interesting to know how all these folks feel about Beijing Biden rejoining the Paris Climate Accord. You know, the one where we do all the work and pay all the money while giving India and China, the world's largest polluters, a 9-year exemption, so China can beat our head in economically. How about rejoining Obama's Iran nuclear deal? You folks comfortable with giving the Ayatollah nuclear arms in their quest of death to America? We going to give them another pallet of cash, too? There's plenty to opine about there. Any opinions available on Sniffin' Joe's $4 billion pledge to the world pandemic efforts, while simultaneously opening the southern borders to contagious, undocumented Democrats? Recall, this is at the same time unemployment and COVID still remain looming issues in our country. We don't have a workable plan for vaccinations. Joe is cowering from the teachers' unions while letting young minds rot. Yet Biden's handlers have him pledging aid overseas. You guys suppose they might have a financial incentive? I'm asking for Hunter. Speaking of the lost prodigal son, perhaps one of those anti-Trumpers could update us on cocaine Hunter's shady oil expertise in the Ukraine, or his brilliant Chinese diplomatic abilities that pay so well. Any thoughts on how those investigations might be going with Daddy at the helm? Do tell. Joe's handlers are now wanting to rejoin the UN Human Rights Council that Trump detached us from. You know, the one led by Russia, China, Cuba, and Venezuela, devoted to improving human rights in the world. Thoughts, folks? What would you guys like to tell all those diabetics about Biden's handlers bowing to Big Pharma by jacking up the price of insulin right after that dastardly Trump got it lowered? Perhaps you could explain whose pockets are being lined with this decision. What would you guys like to tell us? I'm sorry. And finally, anyone want to step up and explain why American tax dollars have been committed for the next 3 years to funding for the Wuhan lab that brought us the scourge of the China virus? Even that dastardly Trump wouldn't consider this. Go ahead, any of you non-Trumpers. Please tell us how much better our new president is doing for America now that Trump is out. I've given you all some starting points for clarification. Now I'm all ears. The Loda American Legion has a fish and chicken fry this evening, Friday, February 26th, from 4 to 7 p.m. Curb service, 217-781-3416. Carryouts available, $10 or $5 for children above 8. If you can obtain a print copy of the Gilman Star, there are some great photos of the boys and girls basketball teams. IW boys win at Cisna Park 68-36. Iroquois West boys won Tuesday night in a gym where it's been tough for the Raiders to get a W the last few years, but they did it Tuesday night. Ryan Tilstra led the West scoring with 16, while Jack McMillan and Clayton Leonard were also in double figures with 12 and 11 respectively. The Raiders are now 6-2 overall and 3-1 in SVC play, with their only league loss and a one-point decision to PBL. This has been Tamara reading the Gilman Star. I hope to read with you again soon. Stay well.